It's apparent that Rainbow 43 is in trouble as long as you have it, and so will we be if they find out. Do you mean a tribesperson reading it is taboo? I'm sure of it. Well, it would be no great loss to give it back. I should say that 95% of it is incredibly dull. Endless infighting among political groups. Endless justification of policies whose wisdom I cannot possibly judge. Endless homilies on ethical matters, which even when enlightened, and they usually aren't, are couched with such infuriating self-righteousness as to almost enforce violation. You sound as though I would be doing you a great favor if I took the thing away from you. Except that there's always the other 5% that discusses the never-to-be-mentioned Aurora. I keep thinking that there may be something there, and that it may be helpful to me. That's why I wanted to know about the Sacratorium. Do you hope to find support for the book's concept of Aurora in the Sacratorium? In a way. And I'm also terribly caught up in what the book has to say about automata, or robots, to use their term. I find myself attracted to the concept. Surely you don't take it seriously. Almost. If you accept some passages of the book literally, then there is an implication that some robots were in human shape. Naturally, if you're going to construct a simulacrum of a human being, you will make it look like a human being. Yes, simulacrum means likeness, but a likeness can be crude indeed. An artist can draw a stick figure, and you might know he is representing a human being and recognize it. A circle for the head, a stalk for the body, and four bent lines for arms and legs, and you have it. But I mean robots that really look like a human being in every detail. Ridiculous, Harry. Imagine the time it would take to fashion the metal of the body into perfect proportions with the smooth curve of underlying muscles. Who said metal, Doris? The impression I got is that such robots were organic or pseudo-organic, that they were covered with skin, that you could not easily draw a distinction between them and human beings in any way. Does the book say that? Not in so many words. The inference, however, is your inference, Harry. You can't take it seriously. Let me try. I find four things that I can deduce from what the book says about robots, and I followed up every reference the index gave. First, as I say, they, or some of them, exactly resembled human beings. Second, they had very extended lifespans, if you want to call it that. Better say effectiveness, said Doris, or you'll begin thinking of them as human altogether. Third, said Selden, ignoring her, that some, or at any rate at least one, continues to live on to this day. Harry, that's one of the most widespread legends we have. The ancient hero does not die, but remains in suspended animation, ready to return to save his people at some time of great need. Really, Harry? Fourth, said Selden, still not rising to the bait, there are some lines that seem to indicate that the central temple, or the sacratorium, if that's what it is, though I haven't found that word in the book, actually, contains a robot. He paused, then said, Do you see? Doris said, No, what should I see? If we combine the 4 points, perhaps a robot that looks exactly like a human being and that is still alive, having been alive for, say, the last 20,000 years, is in the Sacratorium. Come on, Harry, you can't believe that. I don't actually believe it, but I can't entirely let go either. What if it's true? What if, it's only one chance out of a million, I admit, it's true? Don't you see how useful he could be to me? He could remember the galaxy as it was long before any reliable historical records existed. He might help make psychohistory possible. Even if it was true, do you suppose the Mycogenians would let you see and interview the robot? I don't intend to ask permission. I can at least go to the Sacratorium and see if there's something to interview first. Not now. Tomorrow at the earliest. And if you don't think better of it by morning, we go. You told me yourself they don't allow women. They allow women to look at it from outside, I'm sure, and I suspect that is all we'll get to do. And there she was adamant. 51. Harry Seldon was perfectly willing to let Doris take the lead. She had been out in the main roadways of Mycogen, and was more at home with them than he was. Doris Benevoli, brows knitted, was less delighted with the prospect. She said, "We can easily get lost, you know." "Not with that booklet," said Seldon. She looked up at him impatiently. "Fix your mind on Mycogen, Harry. What I should have is a computomap, something I can ask questions of. This Mycogenian version is just a piece of folded plastic. I can't tell this thing where I am. I can't tell it by word of mouth, and I can't even tell it by pushing the necessary contacts. It can't tell me anything either way. It's a print thing." "Then read what it says." "That's what I'm trying to do, but it's written for people who are familiar with the system to begin with. We'll have to ask." "No, Doris, that would be a last resort. I don't want to attract attention. I would rather we take our chances and try to find our own way, even if it means making one or two wrong turns." Doris leafed through the booklet with great attention, and then said grudgingly, "Well, it gives the Sacratorium important mention. I suppose that's only natural. I presume everyone in Mycogen would want to get there at one time or another." Then, after additional concentration, she said, "I'll tell you what. There's no way of taking a conveyance from here to there." "What?" "Don't get excited. Apparently there's a way of getting from here to another conveyance that will take us there. We'll have to change from one to another." Seldon relaxed. "Well, of course. You can't take an expressway to half the places on Trantor without changing." Doris cast an impatient glance at Seldon. "I know that, too. It's just that I'm used to having these things tell me so. When they expect you to find out for yourself, the simplest things can escape you for a while." "All right, dear, don't snap. If you know the way now, lead. I will follow humbly." And follow her he did, until they came to an intersection where they stopped. Three white-kirtled males and a pair of gray-kirtled females were at the same intersection. Seldon tried a universal and general smile in their direction, but they responded with a blank stare and looked away. And then the conveyance came. It was an outmoded version of what Seldon, back on Helicon, would have called a grab-a-bus. There were some 20 upholstered benches inside, each capable of holding 4 people. Each bench had its own doors on both sides of the bus. When it stopped, passengers emerged on either side. For a moment, Seldon was concerned for those who got out on the traffic side of the grab-a-bus, but then he noticed that every vehicle approaching from either direction stopped as it neared the bus. None passed it while it was not moving. Doris pushed Seldon impatiently and he moved on to a bench where two adjoining seats were available. Doors followed after. The men always got on and got off first, he noticed. Doors muttered to him, "Stop studying humanity. Be aware of your surroundings." "I'll try." "For instance," she said, and pointed to a smooth boxed-off area on the back of the bench directly before each of them. As soon as the conveyance had begun to move, words lit up, naming the next stop, and the notable structures or crossways that were nearby. "Now that will probably tell us when we're approaching the changeover we want. At least the sector isn't completely barbaric." "Good," said Selden. Then, after a while, leaning toward doors, he whispered, "No one is looking at us. It seems that artificial boundaries are set up to preserve individual privacy in any crowded place. Have you noticed that?" "I've always taken it for granted. If that's going to be a rule of your psychohistory, no one will be very impressed by it." As Doris had guessed, the direction plaque in front of them eventually announced the approach to the changeover for the direct line to the Sacratorium. They exited and again had to wait. Some buses ahead had already left this intersection, but another Gravibus was already approaching. They were on a well-traveled route, which was not surprising. The Sacratorium was bound to be the center and heartbeat of the sector. They got on the Gravibus, and Selden whispered, "We're not paying." According to the map, public transportation is a free service. Selden thrust out his lower lip. "How civilized. I suppose that nothing is all of a piece, not backwardness, not barbarism, nothing." But Doris nudged him and whispered, "Your rule is broken. We're being watched. The man on your right." 52. Selden's eyes shifted briefly. The man to his right was rather thin and seemed quite old. He had dark brown eyes and a swarthy complexion, and Selden was sure that he would have had black hair if he had not been depilated. He faced front again, thinking. This brother was rather atypical. The few brothers he had paid any attention to had been rather tall, light-skinned, and with blue or gray eyes. Of course, he had not seen enough of them to make a general rule. Then there was a light touch on the right sleeve of his kirtle. Selden turned hesitantly and found himself looking at a card on which was written lightly, "Careful Tribesman." Selden started and put a hand to his skin cap automatically. The man next to him silently mouthed, "Hair." Selden's hand found it, a tiny exposure of bristles at his temple. He must have disturbed the skin cap at some point or another. Quickly, and as unobtrusively as possible, he tugged the skin cap, then made sure it was snug under the pretense of stroking his head. He turned to his neighbor on his right, nodded slightly, and mouthed, "Thank you." His neighbor smiled and said in a normal speaking voice, "Going to the Sacratorium?" Selden nodded. "Yes, I am." "Easy guess. So am I. Shall we get off together?" His smile was friendly. I'm with your woman, of course. All three together, then?" Selden was not sure how to react. A quick look in the other direction showed him that Dora's eyes were turned straight ahead. She was showing no interest in masculine conversation, an attitude appropriate for a sister. However, Selden felt a soft pat on his left knee, which he took, with perhaps little justification, to mean, "It's all right." In any case, his natural sense of courtesy was on that side, and he said, "Yes, certainly." There was no further conversation until the direction plaque told them they were arriving at the Sacratorium, and Selden's Mycogenian friend was rising to get off. The Gravibus made a wide turn about the perimeter of a large area of the Sacratorium grounds, and there was a general exodus when it came to a halt, the men sliding in front of the women to exit first. The women followed. The Mycogenian's voice crackled a bit with age, but it was cheerful. He said, "It's a little early for lunch, my friends, but take my word for it that things will be crowded in not too long a time. Would you be willing to buy something simple now and eat it outside? I am very familiar with this area, and I know a good place." Selden wondered if this was a device to maneuver innocent tribespeople into something or other disreputable or costly, yet decided to chance it. "You're very kind," he said. "Since we are not at all familiar with the place, we will be glad to let you take the lead." They bought lunch, sandwiches, and a beverage that looked like milk at an open-air stand. Since it was a beautiful day, and they were visitors, the old Mycogenian said they would go to the Sacratorium grounds and eat out of doors, the better to become acquainted with their surroundings. During their walk, carrying their lunch, Selden noted that, on a very small scale, the Sacratorium resembled the Imperial Palace, and that the grounds around it resembled, on a minute scale, the Imperial grounds. He could scarcely believe that the Mycogenian people admired the imperial institution, or indeed did anything but hate and despise it. Yet the cultural attraction was apparently not to be withstood. "It's beautiful," said the Mycogenian with obvious pride. "Quite," said Selden. "How it glistens in the daylight." "The grounds around it," he said, "are constructed in imitation of the government grounds on our Dawn world, in miniature, to be sure." "Did you ever see the grounds of the Imperial Palace?" asked Selden cautiously. The Mycogenian caught the implication and seemed in no way put out by it. "They copied the Dawn world as best they could, too." Selden doubted that in the extreme, but he said nothing. They came to a semicircular seat of white stonite, sparkling in the light as the Sacratorium did. "Good," said the Mycogenian, his dark eyes gleaming with pleasure. "No one's taken my place. I call it mine only because it's my favorite seat. It affords a beautiful view of the side wall of the Sacratorium past the trees. Please sit down. It's not cold, I assure you. And your companion, she is welcome to sit too. She is a tribeswoman, I know, and has different customs. She may speak if she wishes." Doris gave him a hard look and sat down. Selden, recognizing the fact that they might remain with this old Mycogenian a while, thrust out his hand and said, "I am Harry, and my female companion is Doris. We don't use numbers, I'm afraid." "To each his or her own," said the other expansively. "I am Mycelium 72. We are a large cohort." "Mycelium?" said Selden a bit hesitantly. "You seem surprised," said Mycelium. "I take it, then, you've only met members of our elder families. Names like Cloud and Sunshine and Starlight, all astronomical." "I must admit," began Selden. "Well, meet one of the lower classes. We take our names from the ground and from the microorganisms we grow. Perfectly respectable." "I'm quite certain," said Selden. "And thank you again for helping me with my problem in the Gravibus." "Listen," said Mycelium 72, "I saved you a lot of trouble. If a sister had seen you before I did, she would undoubtedly have screamed, and the nearest brothers would have hustled you off the bus, maybe not even waiting for it to stop moving. Doris leaned forward so as to see across Selden. How is it you did not act in this way yourself? I have no animosity against tribespeople. I'm a scholar. A scholar? First one in my cohort. I studied at the Sacratorium School and did very well. I'm learned in all the ancient arts, and I have a license to enter the tribal library, where they keep book films and books by tribespeople. I can view any book film or read any book I wish to. We even have a computerized reference library, and I can handle that too. That sort of thing broadens your mind. I don't mind a little hair showing. I've seen pictures of men with hair many a time. And women, too. He glanced quickly at Doris. They ate in silence for a while, and then Selden said, I notice that every brother who enters or leaves the Sacratorium is wearing a red sash. Oh, yes, said Mycelium 72. Over the left shoulder and around the right side of the waist, usually very fancily embroidered. Why is that? It's called an obaya. It symbolizes the joy felt at entering the Sacratorium and the blood one would spill to preserve it. Blood? Said Doris, frowning. Just a symbol. I never actually heard of anyone spilling blood over the Sacratorium. For that matter, there isn't that much joy. It's mostly wailing and mourning and prostrating oneself over the lost world. His voice dropped and became soft. Very silly. Doris said, You're not a believer? I'm a scholar, said Mycelium with obvious pride. His face wrinkled as he grinned and took on an even more pronounced appearance of age. Selden found himself wondering how old the man was. Several centuries? No, they'd disposed of that. It couldn't be, and yet... How old are you? Selden asked suddenly, involuntarily. Mycelium 72 showed no signs of taking offense at the question, nor did he display any hesitation at answering 67. Selden had to know. I was told that your people believe that in very early times everyone lived for several centuries. Mycelium 72 looked at Selden quizzically. Now, how did you find that out? Someone must have been talking out of turn. But it's true. There is that belief. Only the unsophisticated believe it, but the elders encourage it, because it shows our superiority. Actually, our life expectancy is higher than elsewhere, because we eat more nutritionally, but living even one century is rare. I take it you don't consider Mycogenians superior, said Selden. Mycelium 72 said, There's nothing wrong with Mycogenians. They're certainly not inferior. Still, I think that all men are equal. Even women, he added, looking across at Doris. I don't suppose, said Selden, that many of your people would agree with that. Or many of your people, said Mycelium 72 with a faint resentment. I believe it, though. A scholar has to. I've viewed and even read all the great literature of the tribespeople. I understand your culture. I've written articles on it. I can sit here just as comfortably with you as though you were us. Doris said a little sharply, You sound proud of understanding tribespeople's ways. Have you ever traveled outside Mycogen? Mycelium 72 seemed to move away a little. No. Why not? You would get to know us better. I wouldn't feel right. I'd have to wear a wig. I'd be ashamed. Dora said, Why a wig? You could stay bald. No, said Mycelium 72. I wouldn't be that kind of fool. I'd be mistreated by all the hairy ones. Mistreated? Why? Said Doris. We have a great many naturally bald people everywhere on Trantor, and on every other world, too. My father is quite bald, said Selden with a sigh, and I presume that in the decades to come I will be bald, too. My hair isn't all that thick now. That's not bald, said Mycelium 72. You keep hair around the edges and over your eyes. I mean bald. No hair at all. Anywhere on your body? Said Doris, interested. And now Mycelium 72 looked offended and said nothing. Selden, anxious to get the conversation back on track, said, Tell me, Mycelium 72, can tribespeople enter the Sacratorium as spectators? Mycelium 72 shook his head vigorously. Never. It's for the Sons of the Dawn only. Doris said, Only the Sons? Mycelium 72 looked shocked for a moment, then said forgivingly, Well, your tribespeople. Daughters of the Dawn enter only on certain days and times. That's just the way it is. I don't say I approve. If it was up to me, I'd say, Go in, enjoy if you can. Sooner others than me, in fact. Don't you ever go in? When I was young, my parents took me. But, he shook his head, it was just people staring at the book and reading from it and sighing and weeping for the old days. It's very depressing. You can't talk to each other. You can't laugh. You can't even look at each other. Your mind has to be totally on the lost world. Totally. He waved a hand in rejection. Not for me. I'm a scholar, and I want the whole world open to me. Good, said Selden, seeing an opening. We feel that way too. We are scholars also, Doris and myself. I know, said Mycelium 72. You know? How do you know? You'd have to be. The only tribespeople allowed in Mycogen are imperial officials and diplomats, important traders and scholars. And to me, you have the look of scholars. That's what interested me in you. Scholars together. He smiled delightedly. So we are. I am a mathematician. Doris is a historian. And you? I specialize in culture. I've read all the great works of literature of the tribespeople. Lissauer, Mentone, Novigor. And we have read the great works of your people. I've read the book, for instance, about the lost world. Mycelium 72's eyes opened wide in surprise. His olive complexion seemed to fade a little. You have? How? Where? At our university, we have copies that we can read if we have permission. Copies of the book? Yes. I wonder if the elders know this. Selden said, And I've read about robots. Robots? Yes. That is why I would like to be able to enter the Sacratorium. I would like to see the robot. Doris kicked lightly at Selden's ankle, but he ignored her. Mycelium 72 said uneasily, I don't believe in such things. Scholarly people don't. But he looked about as though he was afraid of being overheard. Selden said, I've read that a robot still exists in the Sacratorium. Mycelium 72 said, I don't want to talk about such nonsense. Selden persisted. Where would it be if it was in the Sacratorium. Even if one was there, I couldn't tell you. I haven't been in there since I was a child. Would you know if there was a special place, a hidden place? There's the elders' aery. Only elders go there, but there's nothing there. Have you ever been there? No, of course not. Then how do you know? I don't know that there's no pomegranate tree there. I don't know that there's no laser organ there. I don't know that there's no item of a million different kinds there. Does my lack of knowledge of their absence show they are all present? For the moment, Selden had nothing to say. A ghost of a smile broke through Mycelium 72's look of concern. He said, "That's scholar's reasoning. I'm not an easy man to tackle, you see. Just the same, I wouldn't advise you to try to get up into the elders' aery. Just the same, I wouldn't advise you to try to get up into the elders' aery. I don't think you'd like what would happen if they found a tribesman inside. Well, best of the dawn to you." And he rose suddenly, without warning, and hurried away. Selden looked after him, rather surprised. What made him rush off like that? "I think," said Doors, "it's because someone is approaching." And someone was. A tall man in an elaborate white kirtle, crossed by an even more elaborate and subtly glittering red sash, glided solemnly toward them. He had the unmistakable look of a man with authority, and the even more unmistakable look of one who is not pleased. 53. Harry Selden rose as the new Mycogenian approached. He hadn't the slightest idea whether that was the appropriate polite behavior, but he had the distinct feeling it would do no harm. Doris Venabile rose with him and carefully kept her eyes lowered. The other stood before them. He, too, was an old man, but more subtly aged than Mycelium 72. Age seemed to lend distinction to his still handsome face. His bald head was beautifully round, and his eyes were a startling blue, contrasting sharply with the bright, all but glowing red of his sash. The newcomer said, "I see you are tribespeople." His voice was more high-pitched than Selden had expected, but he spoke slowly, as though conscious of the weight of authority in every word he uttered. "So we are," said Selden, politely but firmly. He saw no reason not to defer to the other's position, but he did not intend to abandon his own. "Your names?" "I am Harry Selden of Helicon. My companion is Doris Venabile of Cinna. And yours, man of Mycogen?" The eyes narrowed in displeasure, but he too could recognize an air of authority when he felt it. "I am Skystrip II," he said, lifting his head higher. "An elder of the Sacratorium. And your position, tribesman?" "We," said Selden, emphasizing the pronoun, "are scholars of Streeling University. I am a mathematician, and my companion is a historian, and we are here to study the ways of Mycogen." "By whose authority?" "By that of Sunmaster 14, who greeted us on our arrival." Skystrip 2 fell silent for a moment, and then a small smile appeared on his face, and he took on an air that was almost benign. He said, "The High Elder, I know him well." "And so you should," said Selden blandly. "Is there anything else, Elder?" "Yes." The Elder strove to regain the high ground. "Who was the man who was with you and who hurried away when I approached?" Selden shook his head. We never saw him before, Elder, and know nothing about him. We encountered him purely by accident and asked about the Sacratorium. What did you ask him? Two questions, Elder. We asked if that building was the Sacratorium and if tribespeople were allowed to enter it. He answered in the affirmative to the first question and in the negative to the second. Quite so. And what is your interest in the Sacratorium? Sir, we are here to study the ways of Mycogen, and is not the Sacratorium the heart and brain of Mycogen? It is entirely ours and reserved for us. Even if an elder, the High Elder, would arrange for permission in view of our scholarly function? Have you indeed the High Elder's permission? Selden hesitated the slightest moment, while Dor's eyes lifted briefly to look at him sideways. He decided he could not carry off a lie of this magnitude. No, he said, not yet. Or ever, said the Elder. You are here in Mycogen by authority. But even the highest authority cannot exert total control over the public. We value our Sacratorium, and the populace can easily grow excited over the presence of a tribesperson anywhere in Mycogen, but most particularly in the vicinity of the Sacratorium. It would take one excitable person to raise a cry of invasion, and a peaceful crowd such as this one would be turned into one that would be thirsting to tear you apart. I mean that quite literally. For your own good, even if the High Elder has shown you kindness, leave. Now. But the Sacratorium, said Selden stubbornly, though Dors was pulling gently at his kirtle. What is there in the Sacratorium that can possibly interest you? Said the Elder. You see it now. There is nothing for you to see in the interior. There is the robot, said Selden. The Elder stared at Selden in shocked surprise, and then, bending to bring his lips close to Selden's ear, whispered harshly, Leave now, or I will raise the cry of invasion myself. Nor, were it not for the High Elder, would I give you even this one chance to leave. And Dors, with surprising strength, nearly pulled Selden off his feet as she stepped hastily away, dragging him along until he caught his balance, and stepped quickly after her. Fifty-four. It was over breakfast the next morning, not sooner, that Dors took up the subject, and in a way that Selden found most wounding. She said, Well, that was a pretty fiasco yesterday. Selden, who had honestly thought he had gotten away with it without comment, looked sullen. What made it a fiasco? Driven out is what we were. And for what? What did we gain? Only the knowledge that there is a robot in there. Mycelium 72 said there wasn't. Of course he said that. He's a scholar, or thinks he is. And what he doesn't know about the Sacratorium would probably fill that library he goes to. You saw the Elder's reaction. I certainly did. He would not have reacted like that if there was no robot inside. He was horrified, we knew. That's just your guess, Harry. And even if there was, we couldn't get in. We could certainly try. After breakfast, we go out and buy a sash for me, one of those obayas. I put it on, keep my eyes devoutly downward, and walk right in. Skin cap and all? They'll spot you in a microsecond. No, they won't. We'll go into the library where all the tribespeople data is kept. I'd like to see it anyway. From the library, which is a secretorium annex, I gather, there will probably be an entrance into the secretorium. Where you will be picked up at once. Not at all. You heard what Mycelium 72 had to say. Everyone keeps his eyes down and meditates on their great lost world, Aurora. No one looks at anyone else. It would probably be a grievous breach of discipline to do so. Then I'll find the elders, Airy. Just like that? At one point, Mycelium 72 said he would advise me not to try to get up into the elders, Airy. Up. It must be somewhere in that tower of the Sacratorium, the central tower. Doris shook her head. I don't recall the man's exact words, and I don't think you do either. That's a terribly weak foundation to... Wait. She stopped suddenly and frowned. Well, said Selden. There is an archaic word, Airy, that means a dwelling place on high. Ah, there you are. You see, we've learned some vital things as the result of what you call a fiasco. And if I can find a living robot that's 20,000 years old, and if it can tell me... Suppose that such a thing exists, which passes belief, and that you find it, which is not very likely. How long do you think you will be able to talk to it before your presence is discovered? I don't know. But if I can prove it exists, and if I can find it, then I'll think of some way to talk to it. It's too late for me to back out now under any circumstances. Hummon should have left me alone when I thought there was no way of achieving psychohistory. Now that it seems there may be, I won't let anything stop me, short of being killed. The Mycogenians may oblige, Harry, and you can't run that risk. Yes, I can. I'm going to try. No, Harry. I must look after you, and I can't let you. You must let me. Finding a way to work out psychohistory is more important than my safety. My safety is only important because I may work out psychohistory. Prevent me from doing so, and your task loses its meaning. Think about it. Harry felt himself infused with a renewed sense of purpose. Psychohistory, his nebulous theory that he had, such a short while ago, despaired ever of proving, loomed larger, more real. Now he had to believe that it was possible. He could feel it in his gut. The pieces seemed to be falling together, and although he couldn't see the whole pattern yet, he was sure the Sacratorium would yield another piece to the puzzle. Then I'll go in with you so I can pull you out, you idiot, when the time comes. Women can't enter. What makes me a woman? Only this gray kirtle. You can't see my breasts under it. I don't have a woman-style hairdo with the skin cap on. I have the same washed, unmarked face a man has. The men here don't have stubble. All I need is a white kirtle and a sash, and I can enter. Any sister could do it if she wasn't held back by a taboo. I am not held back by one. You're held back by me. I won't let you. It's too dangerous. No more dangerous for me than for you. But I must take the risk. Then so must I. Why is your imperative greater than mine? Because... Selden paused and thought. Just tell yourself this, said Doris, her voice hard as rock. I won't let you go there without me. If you try, I will knock you unconscious and tie you up. If you don't like that, then give up any thought of going alone. Selden hesitated and muttered darkly. He gave up the argument, at least for now. 55. The sky was almost cloudless, but it was a pale blue as though wrapped in a high, thin mist. That, thought Selden, was a good touch. But suddenly he missed the sun itself. No one on Trantor saw the planet's sun unless he or she went upperside, and even then only when the natural cloud layer broke. Did native Trantorians miss the sun? Did they give it any thought? When one of them visited another world where a natural sun was in view, did he or she stare, half-blinded at it, with awe? Why, he wondered, did so many people spend their lives not trying to find answers to questions, not even thinking of questions to begin with? Was there anything more exciting in life than seeking answers? His glance shifted to ground level. The wide roadway was lined with low buildings, most of them shops. Numerous individual ground cars moved in both directions, each hugging the right side. They seemed like a collection of antiques, but they were electrically driven and quite soundless. Selden wondered if antique was always a word to sneer at. Could it be that silence made up for slowness? Was there any particular hurry to life after all? There were a number of children on the walkways, and Selden's lips pressed together in annoyance. Clearly, an extended lifespan for the Mycogenians was impossible unless they were willing to indulge in infanticide. The children of both sexes, though it was hard to tell the boys from the girls, wore kirtles that came only a few inches below the knee, making the wild activity of childhood easier. The children also still had hair, reduced to an inch in length at most. But even so, the older ones among them had hoods attached to their kirtles and wore them raised, hiding the top of the head altogether. It was as though they were getting old enough to make the hair seem a trifle obscene, or old enough to be wishing to hide it, in longing for the day of rite of passage when they were depilated. A thought occurred to Selden. He said, "Doors, when you've been out shopping, who paid, you or the raindrop women?"
"I did, of course. The raindrops never produced a credit tile. But why should they? What was being bought was for us, not for them."
"But you have a Trantorian credit tile, a tribeswoman credit tile."
"Of course, Harry, but there was no problem. The people of Mycogen may keep their own culture and ways of thought and habits of life as they wish. They can destroy their cephalic hair and wear kirtles. Nevertheless, they must use the world's credits. If they don't, that would choke off commerce, and no sensible person would want to do that. The credits nerve, Harry."
She held up her hand as though she was holding an invisible credit tile.
"And they accepted your credit tile?" "Never a peep out of them, and never a word about my skin cap. Credits sanitize everything."
"Well, that's good. So I can buy."
"No, I'll do the buying. Credits may sanitize everything, but they more easily sanitize a tribeswoman. They're so used to paying women little or no attention that they automatically pay me the same. And here's the clothing store I've been using."
"I'll wait out here. Get me a nice red sash, one that looks impressive."
"Don't pretend you've forgotten our decision. I'll get two, and another white kirtle also, to my measurements."
"Won't they think it odd that a woman would be buying a white kirtle?"
"Of course not. They'll assume I'm buying it for a male companion who happens to be my size. Actually, I don't think they'll bother with any assumptions at all, as long as my credit tile is good."
Selden waited, half expecting someone to come up and greet him as a tribesman, or denounce him as one, more likely. But no one did. Those who passed him did so without a glance, and even those who glanced in his direction moved on seemingly untouched. He was especially nervous about the gray kirtles, the women, walking by in pairs, or even worse, with a man. They were downtrodden, unnoticed, snubbed.
How better to gain a brief notoriety than by shrieking at the sight of a tribesman? But even the women moved on. They're not expecting to see a tribesman, Selden thought, so they don't see one. That, he decided, augured well for their forthcoming invasion of the Sacratorium. How much less would anyone expect to see tribespeople there, and how much more effectively would they therefore fail to see them? He was in fairly good humor when Doris emerged. You have everything?
Absolutely.
Then let's go back to the room so you can change. The white kirtle did not fit her quite as well as the gray one did. Obviously, she could not have tried it on, or even the densest shopkeeper would have been struck with alarm.
How do I look, Harry? She asked.
Exactly like a boy, said Selden. Now let's try the sash, or obaya. I had better get used to calling it that.
Doris, without her skin cap, was shaking out her hair gratefully. She said sharply, Don't put it on now. We're not going to parade through Mycogen with the sash on. The last thing we want to do is call attention to ourselves.
No, no, I just want to see how it goes on.
Well, not that one. This one is better quality and more elaborate.
You're right, Doris. I've got to gather in what attention there is. I don't want them to detect you as a woman.
I'm not thinking of that, Harry. I just want you to look pretty.
1,000 thanks, but that's impossible, I suspect. Now let's see, how does this work?
Together, Harry and Doris practiced putting their obayas on and taking them off, over and over again, until they could do it in one fluid motion. Doris taught Harry how to do it, as she had seen a man doing it the day before at the Sacratorium. When Harry praised her for her acute observations, she blushed and said,
It's really nothing, Harry, just something I noticed.
Harry replied, Then you're a genius for noticing. Finally satisfied, they stood well apart, each surveying the other. Harry's obaya glittered, a bright red dragon-like design standing out against a paler field of similar hue. Doris was a little less bold, had a simple thin line down the center, and was very light in color.
There, she said, just enough to show good taste.
She took it off. Now, said Selden, we fold it up and it goes into one of the inner pockets. I have my credit tile, Hummins, really, and the key to this place in this one, and here on the other side, the book.
The book? Should you be carrying it around?
I must. I'm guessing that anyone going to the Sacratorium ought to have a copy of the book with him. They may intone passages or have readings. If necessary, we'll share the book, and maybe no one will notice. Ready?
I'll never be ready, but I'm going with you.
It will be a tedious trip. Will you check my skin cap and make sure no hair shows this time? And don't scratch your head.
I won't.
You look all right.
So do you.
You also look nervous.
And Selden said wryly, Guess why? Doris reached out impulsively and squeezed Harry's hand, then drew back as if surprised at herself. Looking down, she straightened her white kirtle. Harry, himself a trifle surprised and peculiarly pleased, cleared his throat and said, Okay, let's go. Airy.
Robot, a term used in the ancient legends of several worlds for what are more usually called automata. Robots are described as generally human in shape and made of metal, although some are supposed to have been pseudo-organic in nature.
Harry Seldon, in the course of the flight, is popularly supposed to have seen an actual robot, but that story is of dubious origin. Nowhere in Seldon's voluminous writings does he mention robots at all, although Encyclopedia Galactica. 56. They were not noticed. Harry Seldon and Doris Van Abbeley repeated the trip of the day before, and this time no one gave them a second look. Hardly anyone even gave them a first look. On several occasions, they had to tuck their knees to one side to allow someone sitting on an inner seat to get past them and out. When someone got in, they quickly realized they had to move over if there was an inner empty seat. This time, they quickly grew tired of the smell of kirtles that were not freshly laundered, because they were not so easily diverted by what went on outside. But eventually, they were there. "That's the library," said Seldon in a low voice.
"I suppose so," said Doris. "At least that's the building that Mycelium 72 pointed out yesterday."
They sauntered toward it leisurely. "Take a deep breath," said Seldon. "This is the first hurdle." The door ahead was open, the light within subdued. There were 5 broad stone steps leading upward. They stepped onto the lowermost one and waited several moments before they realized that their weight did not cause the steps to move upward. Doris grimaced very slightly and gestured Seldon upward. Together, they walked up the stairs, feeling embarrassed on behalf of Mycogen for its backwardness. Then, through a door, where, at a desk immediately inside, was a man bent over the simplest and clumsiest computer Seldon had ever seen. The man did not look up at them. No need, Seldon supposed. White kirtle, bald head. All Mycogenians looked so nearly the same that one's eyes slid off them, and that was to the tribespeople's advantage at the moment. The man, who still seemed to be studying something on the desk, said, "Scholars?" "Scholars," said Seldon. The man jerked his head toward a door. "Go in. Enjoy." They moved inward, and as nearly as they could see, they were the only ones in this section of the library. Either the library was not a popular resort, or the scholars were few, or most likely, both. Seldon whispered, "I thought surely we would have to present some sort of license or permission form, and I would have to plead having forgotten it." "He probably welcomes our presence under any terms. Did you ever see a place like this? If a place, like a person, could be dead, we would be inside a corpse." Most of the books in this section were print books, like the book in Seldon's inner pocket. Doris drifted along the shelves, studying them. She said, "Old books, for the most part, part classic, part worthless." "Outside books? Non-Mycogen, I mean?" "Oh, yes. If they have their own books, they must be kept in another section. This one is for outside research, for poor little self-styled scholars like yesterday's. This is the reference department. And here's an Imperial Encyclopedia. Must be 50 years old if a day. And a computer." She reached for the keys, and Seldon stopped her. "Wait. Something could go wrong, and we'll be delayed." He pointed to a discreet sign above a freestanding set of shelves that glowed with the letters, "To the Secretorium." The second A in Secretorium was dead, possibly recently, or possibly because no one cared. The Empire, thought Seldon, was in decay, all parts of it. Mycogen too. He looked about. The poor library, so necessary to Mycogenian pride, perhaps so useful to the elders who could use it to find crumbs to shore up their own beliefs and present them as being those of sophisticated tribespeople, seemed to be completely empty.
No one had entered after them.
Selden said, "Let's step in here, out of eyeshot of the man at the door, and put on our sashes."
And then at the